This is Karen Lyle of Salesport Talk sharing a conversation I had while in Paris with John Poschner, General Manager of the Yacht Club Costa Smeralda in Sardinia, Italy.
The whole Costa Smeralda area, which is basically the north shore of Sardinia in the Mediterranean, has been developed by His Highness the Aga Khan, Prince Karim Aga Khan, in the late 60s. Basically, it's 55 kilometers of coastline, and it's called Costa Smeralda. That's where Porto Cervo is located. And so he founded Porto Cervo. He founded the whole coastline, basically, developed the whole area with hotels and infrastructure. One of the things he founded was the yacht club itself in 1967. So he still is the president of the club. And his daughter, Princess Zara, is the president of the board. And also when we started the One Ocean Foundation, she's very environmental conscious and wants to drive that. So she is president of the foundation.
Well, you know, I had a conversation with some of the Ismaili followers of the Aga Khan in Zanzibar at the Serena Inn, which is one of the properties. And I've been a guest there because I organize safaris through Tanzania and also end up always in Zanzibar sailing the dhows.
Beautiful. Okay.
Yes, but one of the things that was really clear to me was that the Aga Khan and his followers are very business-minded and open internationally to many different cultures and many different experiences, and that's something that I've always experienced whenever I've been traveling.
I fully agree. The Aga Khan family and what they stand for the whole Ismailism. One of the things, just to underline what you just said on the openness to different cultures, is he actually founded the Aga Khan actually founded the Center of Pluralism with very high personalities like Kofi Annan, for example. He's part of that. So he's really about believing in pluralism, different cultures, and trying to sort of be a trade union in a way, in a good way. So I think he's a fabulous visionary and leader in that respect.
That conversation between John Poschner and myself was before the pandemic. Yesterday, at the Yacht Club Costa Smeralda, the last leg of the Youth Foiling Gold Club concluded. Weather conditions on the second-to-last day put the technical skills of the teams to the test, with winds of around 18 knots and gusts up to 20, choppy seas, and poor visibility. Young Azura got a good start and were hot on the heels of leaders Team Argentina up to the third leg when the boat capsized due to a gust. Despite having lost their advantage, the team were able to recover some ground to cross the finish line in fourth place. This is Karen Lyle of Salesport Talk giving a shout out to Yacht Club Costa Smeralda in Porto Cervo, Sardinia, Italy.
All right, Crisscross Applesauce, thank you for that. Welcome back to the show, the dulcet tones of the 80s crooner. We are here for you at 9:40 Pacific time. Rick Tittle and Karen Lyle. Karen Lyle co-hosts this segment with me because she is from SalesportTalk.com, and we devote this segment to the seven C's. Karen joins me live on the horn from her yacht club. Where are you, Karen?
Well, actually, I will be on my yacht as soon as I'm finished with the show. I'm just taking it over to the boatyard for a rigging inspection. So,
do you have to do that whenever you go out? Do they have to check your rigs?
Well, it's basically for commercial school insurance for a sailing school that I'm setting up. So you have to have an experienced rigger go up and check the rig where the insurance company will insure it.
Very interesting. All right, so I know you wanted to talk about John Vandemore today. John Vandemore was the Stanford sailing coach that got caught up in the Varsity Blues scandal, the admissions scandal, and he lost his job. And he was probably, if you watched the Netflix special, or I had him on my show a couple weeks ago talking about his book, Rigged Justice, double entendre. He basically just said, yeah, okay, on a phone call. Then he was like, whoops, what happened? And but the challenges that go to coaches in all sports when it comes to recruiting, I mean, in football, they will count how many text messages you give recruits. But with college sailing, Karen, as you know, there are a lot of people that don't even know that there's college sailing programs. So what about some of the challenges that they have?
Well, I mean, I finished reading John's book, Rig Justice, this last week. And certainly, I would say that I have empathy for the man for getting caught up in this. What I'm questioning, or kind of what I wanted to talk to you about too, is, you know, if a coach is in a position of power and influence, what kind of responsibility do they have for how they make a referral to the school for someone who's making a donation to them? I mean, you know, is it all on the school, or is it something that the coach has some responsibility for due diligence? What do you think?
Well, there are many NCAA officers which deal with all the sort of, what's the word? It'll come to me. But I used to have a guy who would come on once a week that would talk about the rules and ramifications of recruiting. There are all sorts of very hard and fast rules about recruiting. And yeah, you don't want to just say, look, this guy is going to donate $1 million and we're going to build a new science building, but his kid stinks at the sports. So I think everything has to be above board at all times. Compliance, that's it. Compliance officer. That's what I was thinking of. Compliance.
Right. And I'm not as familiar with the other sports as you are. I'm certainly familiar with the yachting community and the sailing world. And I feel like that the power and influence that the person has when they're in a position, you know, where they're making recommendations as to who's going to be on the team, that it really should be about merit for who's on the team, and also that they have some due diligence for any kind of referral they make, either the person that's coming to them with money or otherwise. You know, that's something that one of the things that John said in his book was, I had received zero training from Stanford about ethics and legalities of donations. I was glad the university had an entire athletics department devoted to evaluating and processing gifts. My assumption now, I know, was mistaken. You know, I feel like that whether or not someone has training from Stanford, that the idea about ethics and legality should come with the person, right? That's something that you have to take responsibility for yourself.
There's no doubt, as much as you want the talented athlete, when you have a fringe sport, and Stanford likes to brag about their President's Cup, which means the most national championships, and there are only two sports in the NCAA which produce revenue, and that's men's basketball and football. No other sport, the other sports cost more than the money they're going to bring in from the gate or anything. So you have to make all your money on college football and college basketball for men, not even the women bringing any money. So if you're in a sailing program and someone says, hey, I'm going to give you money to the sailing program, you might say, well, this athlete might not be, you know, Captain Cook, but maybe I can work with him or her. I mean, I do get it.
Well, and you were talking a little bit about merit, and that there's all of these rules in the other sports that are more dominant and that bring in the money. I think for sailing, I don't know that the sailing community is aware of all of those things, because it's coming out of a yacht club community, you know, where people are doing this more recreationally, and unless kids are on the track for profession, being a professional, like, you know, going into America's Cup or heading for the Olympics or something like that. I know the Olympics is not the same professional track, but still, they're not getting the same kind of information. I certainly don't know all the rules that you're aware of, you know, for the sports of basketball and football that have been so well examined.
Well, over the years,
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Do you feel like that what is the merit that is necessary to be looked at? I mean, there was a thing that Van der Merwe said in his book. He said, I attended an all-coaches meeting. David Shaw, the head football coach,
said he passed on a top quarterback because he wasn't a Stanford man, but had happily brought in a lesser player who believed he was would be a better fit. Hearing from Coach Shaw, whose team had gone 10-3, won a bowl game, and had been ranked 125th overall nationwide that past season, strengthened my resolve to focus more on personality values and less on stats as I recruited my next class. What is the role of merit in this?
Well, you have to make sure. This is why the NFL has the combine. And remember, in the NFL, the emphasis is on the second syllable. It's not offense, defense, and combine. It's offense, defense, combine. Anyway, in Indianapolis, they take all the potential draft picks, and they call it the Underwear Olympics. They measure you. They do all sorts of medical tests. Then they do drills. But they also have personal interviews. And you could have a guy who's the best talent you've ever seen, but if he has a swastika tattoo on his neck, you might say, this might not be my type of guy. So Stanford, it's harder to get into Stanford than it is to get into Harvard right now. So Stanford has to recruit, they have to find the valedictorian who's also a blue chip football player, which is not easy. That's why the Bay Area doesn't really care about Stanford, because nobody from the Bay Area goes to school there, and the alums leave. This is just my personal opinion. They have that beautiful stadium.
Well, I'm asking your personal opinion.
Nobody ever goes because it's just such an elitist school. If you get in there, like my best friend got in there in high school, and it was great for him, and he's now a Microsoft lawyer, and that's great for him. But that's just the thing, is that Stanford has to find the valedictorian who also is a D1 blue chip football player, which is hard. So, I think a lot of times, you know, you can get breaks on grades depending on what kind of economic background you have. I know sometimes they'll take a break on something like that. But you want everything to be a meritocracy. You want people to, I mean, Richard Sherman, who has gone on to have a fantastic NFL career with a Super Bowl ring and tens of millions of dollars, he came from Compton, as we know, a place in East L.A. that is very deprived, and a lot of underserved kids are from there, but he had the grades and he had the talent. And so that was kind of a good story. So you'd say, well, who's a Stanford man? You know, and maybe if a guy's a complete knucklehead, but he still was a 4.0 and was a great player. And David Shaw looks at him and this guy's like, all I care about is chicks and weed. And it's like, well, you know, you have everything I want, except you don't seem like a Stanford guy to me. So that's probably what he meant.
Well, I think, you know, paying attention to, diversity in a school is important, too. And I'm wondering why John Vandermore didn't reach out to a historic black college with a sailing program, or, you know, one of the, you know, the Navy or military training, you know, maritime training teams, you know, and create those relationships, because, you know, that it's possible to bring in talent from these other areas. But I think oftentimes that those who are in the yachting community have not traditionally in the past thought about reaching out. There's a little bit more of a barrier, you know, between the different communities. And that's something that I'm seeing, for example, Golden Gate Yacht Club is now putting together a program where they're really reaching out for diversity in their youth training programs, and they're working with U.S. Sailing to kind of open the door to more diversity. That, of course, doesn't help with the grades part of it, because that's something that's another factor, but I'm just talking about the merit of the sailing and being able to get recruits who are going to come from a variety of backgrounds.
Right, and remember, the coach's job is to win. That's the job. And one thing that kills me, and I hear it all the time, like I heard it with Jeff Tedford at Cal, it's like, oh, he's not graduating his players. That's not why you give Jeff Tedford $3 million a year. You give him $3 million a year to win football games. And I played college football. There are over 100 guys on the team. And they make tutors available. They make all sorts of resources available to you, I think more than the regular student body get, to help you with your grades. But if some kid's going to be lazy and not go to class, to blame that on the coach, I think, is an abomination. But people love to do that with men's basketball, men's football. He's not graduating his players. That's not why he's getting paid. He's getting paid to win games, because then if you win games, it brings in more revenue. And the revenue that you bring in, if you look at the SEC, the Southeast Conference, and they're getting $11 million a year for the program. That doesn't just go to football. That keeps women's gymnastics and men's lacrosse and women's swimming. It pays for all those other programs. So to blame a coach because a kid is not going to class, I've never understood that.
Well, it does seem that if you're going to have sports in a college, that you have to pay attention to the sport itself and to what the, you know, the merits of the players are and how they're doing. And as you say, the goal is to win in a competition.
And also, so, remember, these are adults. They're 18 years old, but they are adults, and they have to get some responsibility for themselves. I do understand high school. If you're not graduating your players, I get that. But once you get to college, now you are legally an adult, and you got to grow up.
And go to school for the merits of the school itself. I mean, you know, basically, it's not just about what the status is and what your parents want or your everyone else. I mean, there really is some benefit to learning in your own life and taking responsibility for that.
You would hope so, yeah. And I knew I would never play in the NFL, so I actually had to go to class. If I was going to be a first-round pick, I probably would have dropped out like Kevin Johnson and then become mayor of Sacramento. All right, Karen, anything else before we wrap it up here?
No, I think we've got a good conversation going. I'm hoping that as coaches across the country and in sailing especially are thinking about, you know, what we can all learn from this, because you always want to learn from all of these things, you know, really to pay attention to you know, what's coming in the door, to do due diligence and basically take personal responsibility for whatever referrals you make. I think that's probably a good takeaway.
All right. Good chat, Karen. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. Rick got a little off sailing there, but I like the conversation. We'll take a quick break, and we will come on back on Sports Byline.